Okay, Sharon. Sharon is a new mama. How old is your daughter?
6 months yesterday, actually. Can you believe it?
Sharon, she's
like,
6 months.
Where did the time go, Sarah?
I know. Well, I'm a new mama with you. Like, my son's only 2 months older than your daughter. What's your daughter's name, by the way?
Selma.
Thelma?
Selma.
Or Selma with an S.
Selma. S-E-L-M-A, actually. Selma. It was actually a name that my husband and I, like, loved before we even had kids.
Selma.
We got it from a Khalil Gibran poem.
Oh, so, yeah,
my husband introduced me to this beautiful poet, Khalil Gibran, and it was like a love story that he wrote. And the woman in this poem, her name was Selma. We kind of just like loved it. We're like, hey, if we ever have a girl. And then so we did.
When you were pregnant, did you guys, did you find out the sex? Like, were you, I mean, of course, everybody wants a healthy baby, but you know, it's always like, if the universe is taking orders, you know, I'll have X, you know? I mean, so did you guys want a boy or girl, or you didn't care?
You know, I think just like you nailed it. You know, for your first kid, you just want a healthy baby. Everything is so new to you. And you know, the whole getting pregnant process, just going through it, it was so difficult, you know, like, it's not an easy road. And so we were just kind of nervous the whole time. You know, when we found out we were pregnant, we're like, oh my God, because I know so many people that have had miscarriages and whatnot. But when we found out that we could like get to know the baby's sex by like 20 weeks, we were like, okay, no, we want to know. I just had a feeling it was a girl. My husband thought it was a boy. So it was interesting that we were kind of mixed on that. And we ended up doing, because we're in the middle of COVID, we ended up doing like a private gender reveal, just us two. And we got a good friend of ours to like, you know, confetti. And it was fun.
Oh my God. And here she is. And you know, I love, obviously, okay, you've been at Fox 5 how long? Now,
almost 2 years. Okay. Almost 2 years. Actually, January will be 2 years.
And it's interesting when I watch you, I feel like I can so relate because I feel like you're like an empowered mom now. Like I always hear you say things about like, it's true. You sort of don't realize the struggle of being a mother, fertility issues, right? You think, oh, you know, you can get pregnant, you know,
right.
It's evolution. And then, you know, things like just even being able to take time off, like maternity leave. So how has being a mom changed you? Do you feel like an activist now? Do you feel empowered? Do you feel like to speak up on things? Like how's it been?
You know, I will say one thing is, I didn't realize the struggle that women have to get maternity leave, right?
Yeah.
And how long maternity leave should be. Because in my situation, I feel like just feeling like a normal human, it took me almost like 3 months, you know, to just feel good again, you know, I ended up having a C-section, but recovering from a C-section, just, you know, dealing with, you know, this newborn survival mode, you need time. And you realize that, you know, granted, you know, thankfully our companies give us maternity leave, but there are a lot of women that are really battling between having to be making money, being forced to go back into the workforce because they have no other choice because they have to make money, or, you know, being able to stay at home. And so I feel like that was kind of like, for me, I want to fight for more childcare opportunities, you know, for sure.
I don't remember what country it is, but there's some country I feel like that gives women a year. And it's so, you know.
Oh, I think Canada.
Yeah. And it's like when you first hear that, you're like, oh, that's crazy. But then when you have the child, you're like, no, a year. Yeah. I need it. Like, it's like so, it is, it's so much more than you think to recover from the C-section alone than just like adjusting being a mom. If you're breastfeeding, if then to even find childcare, it's so much on the body that, you know.
It's so much on the body, but also on the mind, right?
Yeah.
Mentally, emotionally, right? Yeah. You go through a lot because you're like, okay, the way you used to function is totally different. Now you have this newborn. You want to make sure it's breathing, it is eating right. Breastfeeding was a huge challenge, you know?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that you kind of go in there thinking you're prepared. And then you're like, whoa, no one told me about that. So, you know, I always say it's the most amazing thing I've ever done is to become a mom, but also the hardest thing I've ever done.
And you and I are career women. Like, and isn't that difficult? Do you feel, I feel like one of the biggest mental struggles is like, I have all these goals and dreams and I still want them. But then there's something about, you know, as the mom, I don't know, your baby just like needs you in ways that they don't need their dad. How are you feeling like that? Like, I don't know. I feel still so just anxious, I guess, about achieving all my goals and wanting more kids. How are you feeling with that? Like, do you feel like you're fighting?
I think that is one of the biggest thing as women that we struggle with, because I think one of the hardest things right now, she's, you know, 6 months, it's not survival mode as much, but more about how do I get back to who I was to remember the things I love to do. You know, now I went back to work a couple months ago. That was difficult because, you know, hey, it was just me and Selma 24/7. And now going back to work was really hard on me and on her. It took us a huge adjustment period, like a couple weeks until she was finally okay. But I feel like for me, I miss her so much. While I like love being at work and it makes me feel like me again and the things I love to do and sharing stories and being in the know of the news and delivering that, I love that, right? That's why we're in this profession. But at the same time, I'm missing my baby so much. So it's like this huge tug of war that you're having with yourself as to like, how far do you want to take, you know, this side of your life, and how much are you okay being away from your baby? So I think that's going to be the constant question I'll be asking myself, because I also want to have more kids.
Me too. I hear you. I'm like,
how?
I know. Who's going to take care of these kids?
How do we do it?
Look, I'm with you. Sharin, you have an awesome story. So I want to go back. I obviously, you know, the mom thing is on my mind because you and I are both moms at the same time for the first time. But yes. Tell me, you grew up in Los Angeles, and I love that you are Persian, which, you know, the minute I hear someone's Persian, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. It sounds like a great culture. It does. You know, the food, the family, you guys just seem like you're in party mode all the time. It sounds fabulous.
Well, I will say, being from Los Angeles, it was really great because I really felt the Persian culture all around, because Los Angeles is the second, you know, biggest hub outside of Los Angeles of Iranians. A lot of people came and moved to Los Angeles after the revolution, especially young people. And so growing up there, it was really nice because there were Persian restaurants and markets and stores and people and drivers, and anywhere you went, you know, you heard the Farsi language, which was like really, it felt like home. So I really miss that about LA. They really have embraced the Persian culture because of how many of us are there. And it's just such a beautiful, rich culture. I think, you know, I really take pride in being Iranian. They say Persian or Iranian, same thing.
Okay.
And you know, it's very family values. You know, we love food, we love music. And so, that's kind of, you know, what I love. We love partying, but we also just like hosting. So, yeah.
what do you think people in America don't know about Persian culture or Iranians that maybe like gets overlooked?
You know, I think the Middle East is just kind of bunched into one category. Mm. You know, even when I say Persian, they have no idea what country that is, right? So when I say Iranian, maybe there's a closer tie, but then they don't know what the difference between Iran and Iraq and, you know, all these different places are in the Middle East. So I think they all get lumped into one category. And there's so much richness, there's so much culture, if you actually kind of go a little bit deeper and look at the traditions. And so I think that's what it is. I think people the other day, they said, you know, your husband, you know, my husband's Lebanese, I'm Iranian. Do we both speak Farsi? We don't, you know, he comes from an Arabic country. So they speak Arabic in Lebanon. And in Iran, it's more Farsi. So, you know, there's just a lot of different things that when you kind of dive into the Middle Eastern culture. But I think the thing that really bonds us is our family values, our cultural traditions. You know, we have Persian New Year, for instance, is huge. It's the beginning of spring. So instead of, you know, the new year that's coming here, December 31st,
sure,
ours is every day, every year at the exact same time of the spring equinox. And the time of the new year is exactly at the spring equinox too. So that could be 3 a.m. or it could be 10 p.m. And we gather around a beautiful spread with really symbolic things for the new year.
Ooh.
And there's a small prayer. We give gifts called AD. Actually, in the newsroom every year, I try to kind of bring in people into the culture and tradition of Nowruz, as they call it, Persian New Year, by handing out AD, which is like gifts. And a lot of times they give it to like young children, and it's fresh money, fresh, crisp money. And a lot of times when you go during Persian New Year, it lasts for 2 weeks. And the tradition is you go visit family members, maybe starting with the elderly person, like your grandfather, or maybe then your aunts and uncles. And when you go there, especially when you're younger, they give you money or gifts, Persian New Year gifts, in forms of maybe crisp money. And a lot of times they give it in $2 bills. So I would sometimes for the last few years, a couple of years, I brought Persian AD for coworkers and $2 bills, just to kind of like let them know, hey, this is the time that we celebrate. It's rebirth. It means new day, Nowruz for Persian scout.
I was going to say, what's the significance of fresh money? Is it health, wealth, good year?
I think it's just fresh. Everything's new. So Persian New Year, Nowruz, is literally like a new day, right? So that's why it just has to be crisp and new, because it's just everything is new. You wear new clothes. You know, have this beautiful spread with really symbolic things for the new year. So, yeah, it's a really fun time. But I think things like that, when people kind of research about the Persian culture, they really go, oh, wow, I had no idea that this is what it entailed, right?
I love that answer because it is true. I think, you know, as Westerners, the minute you hear Middle East, you don't think about all the different countries within the realm of the Middle East. And the truth is, you all, you know, yes, there's some similarities, but Iraqis and Iranians and very different. Afghanis, you know, there's so many differences,
very
truly.
Very similar, but also very different.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, but tell me this. Were you born in the United States or did your entire family immigrate here when you were little?
Yeah, no, I'm a big immigrant story. So I was actually born in Iran, which I think a lot of people don't know about me. I think that's like the fun fact, that I was born in Iran. And my parents just, you know, it was a lot of turmoil there, you know, in Iran at that time. Unfortunately, you know, the revolution had happened and there's new people taking over the country, religious extremists. And so it wasn't really a great time. And my parents were kind of in this situation saying, hey, if things don't get better here in Iran, we're going to have to leave, which I really admire that immigrant story, because, I mean, they were set up in Iran. They, you know, they had a beautiful life and my dad had a great career, and just to kind of pick up and go was a big deal. And they did it just to give, you know, me and my brother a better life. My brother was born in the States. So we immigrated to the United States. Initially, we ended up in Indiana, where my aunt was, my mom's sister. We kind of were living around them for about a year or so. And then we moved to this suburb of Los Angeles called Arcadia, Pasadena, like near the Rose Bowl.
I hear beautiful.
All my dad's
yes.
Family. Yeah. Like it was this perfect. It was perfect because it wasn't right in the heart of LA. So it was a little bit of a suburb. And that's where we kind of grew up. And all my dad's sisters and brothers kind of like went there too, because they did the same thing. They immigrated here just to kind of start a new life. So,
okay, let's go back. When your father was obviously an established, you know, business person in Iran, right? I mean, so he what was his occupation when he was there? What was he doing? Did he own his own business?
Yeah, he was, you know, heading a bank actually. And he was a big business guy and he did really well for himself. And then when he came here, he and his two brothers really just had to put their heads together to really start fresh and in a new country with new customs and new ways of life and language and everything. And so they actually, you know, tried different businesses. Some were successful, some weren't. And then the brothers kind of branched off and my dad ended up starting a medical office, a radiology center. And he ended up having it for 25, 30 years. So I really credit them for doing that. I mean, I can't imagine.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine Sarah, right now with a baby and your husband just randomly, you know, moving to a different country where things are so different from what you're used to.
And I mean, tell people this, because I do feel like we don't, you know, for those of us that, you know, however many generations American that have never had to immigrate anywhere. So, I mean, did your dad just like leave work one day, or did he quit? Like, what happens? Like, I mean, did you guys have much notice, or did your dad just come home and say to your mom? I'm assuming, did your mom, was your mom a stay-at-home mom?
Yeah, you know, from what they told me with this story, my mom was pregnant with my brother. And my dad literally sent me, my mom, and my brother, her belly, to the United States first. And he said, I'm going to monitor the situation here. If things, you know, get worse, then I'm going to have to pack up our things and I'll kind of tie up our loose ends and make my way to the States. So that's kind of how it happened. It didn't happen overnight, right, but it was a gradual, you know, decision that kind of moved quickly, because once we did come to the United States, my dad said, okay, the situation's not getting great here. And Iran, you know, before the mullahs and the ayatollahs, they before they kind of took over, it was a different place, you know. Yeah. People did not have to wear a hijab, and they weren't separated. And so I feel like my parents remember Iran in a totally different way and light than it is now.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was like picking up their life and trying to rebuild here. I don't think it happened overnight for them, but it happened pretty quickly.
Shireen, how old are you when you get to Los Angeles?
Los Angeles, maybe like 5.
Okay, 5. So you end up, you know, you start school in Los Angeles. You know, now luckily you're surrounded by Persian culture, right? So it's not like completely foreign. And I'm sure you probably went to school with other Persian kids.
But my high school wasn't a lot of Persians in Arcadia. I kind of got more immersed when I moved into like the LA area.
So what was that like? Like, was it, you know, do you remember any specific stories of just like adjusting to these wild Los Angeles American kids? I mean, Lord.
I feel like we had a really great upbringing, and my parents, you know, despite the fact that we moved here, and my first language was Farsi, by the way. I didn't know English at all.
Wow.
And so for me to be like a news anchor in an English market, you know, was a pretty big accomplishment and then deal for my family too, even though I was raised here. And my mom said when I went to kindergarten, I didn't know any English, you know, preschool, no English. And so when she put me into the classroom, she was so nervous, and I kept speaking to the teacher in Farsi. And my mom was just crying outside because she's like, she doesn't understand.
Oh my God. But,
you know,
yeah.
And now, you know, my English, you know, far surpasses my Farsi, because, well, you know, if you don't practice it as much. But my parents put me in Farsi classes, private classes, like when we were growing up. And so my junior years and high schools in Arcadia was really great. It was really grounded, very family, not a lot of exposure to like Persian people as much. Then once we moved to like LA, that was just, it was very cool for me, right? Because I moved to the LA side when I went to UCLA, and that was my first exposure to like Westwood and the lifestyles of Los Angeles. And it was exciting. You know, LA is a huge place. It's so spread out, but it's like the land of opportunity and dreams, right? I feel like everybody who's aspiring to be anything goes to Los Angeles. So you grow up feeling that you can do anything. And Los Angeles kind of opens up a lot of doors for you if you have that determination and passion. And my parents really never pushed me in one direction, even though in the Persian culture, it's very traditional to be like a doctor or a lawyer or an engineer. You know, if you talk to any family, it's like, those are like the three choices you have. But thankfully, my parents were very open-minded. They knew I had like a creative side. I loved writing. And so when I went to college, I wasn't sure exactly which path I would explore, but I ended up, you know, getting into a communications department there at UCLA, and broadcasting kind of just spoke to me. And yeah.
And Shireen, UCLA is an incredible college. So you must have been an amazing student in middle school and high school. Did academics come easy? I mean, to immigrate here, English isn't your first language.
Yeah.
And then you know, you're obviously very astute. So like, did you just apply to every college that you wanted and got in?
I did.
Yeah, you're very smart.
You know, my dad always told me to dream really big. And even when I doubted myself, he would always say, you know, shoot for the stars. So even, you know, you do worry that like, oh, UCLA is too hard to get into, USC is too hard to get in, whatever it was. But I just applied. And for me, actually, it came down to decision between USC and UCLA. And I chose UCLA just because I wanted to. The campus seemed really beautiful, and I loved being in the Persian culture of Westwood. There was a lot of Persians. There were a lot of Persian stores and area. So that was kind of like why I decided to go with UCLA. But yeah, thank you. I feel that was a big accomplishment for me. And my parents just kind of kept pushing me. And then when I told them I wanted to get into broadcasting, but there's no real route to get into broadcasting, right? So I tell a lot of people out there, you know, it's not like law school where you can go to law school, take the bar exam, you become an attorney. You know, going into journalism, everybody has their own path and way, and you know, there's no one direct route, and that even guarantees you. And even when you get in, there's no guarantee of like longevity, right?
Because
I think you have a perception of what broadcasting is, and then when you get there, you're like, oh wow, this is not as glamorous as I thought, or wow, this is how much you have to sacrifice your life.
I love that. That's the truth. That's the truth that people need to hear. What was the biggest surprise for you in our industry?
I think when people see reporters out in the field or anchors on the desk, it just looks so glamorous, and they think like things are done for them, and it's like, oh no. When you are starting out in this business, you are literally throwing your heart and soul into it, because you're especially as a reporter. And I really advise, if people have like, you know, aspirations to be an anchor, in order to be a good anchor, I've always believed you have to be a great reporter, and to like do your due diligence and your time as a reporter, because it just makes you stronger on the desk. But being a reporter in the field, especially in a small market, is a grind. You know, sometimes you're shooting your own stuff. Sometimes you're definitely writing your own stuff. You're working really weird hours. It could be early morning, could be late at night. So there's a lot of, you know, hard work, and you have to have that work ethic. And then, you know, it just depends on what you, where you want to take it. So
I love it.
When I was applying for my first position, my first job, my dad, of course, he was like, apply to CNN out the gate. And I was like, Dad, let me get some experience under my belt.
Your dad's great.
He encouraged me and like, you know, told me to believe in myself, even though sometimes like you might think like you're not good enough. And no, I have to fix my reel a million times. I remember I watched my reel and kept fixing it and updating it and cutting it and cutting. And my dad's like, just send it. And then once I sent it, it was amazing, because I, you know, my first gig was in Santa Barbara. And that's kind of like where things started.
Sharin, we might need your dad for motivational talks. I mean, this man is like NBC Nightly News, takeover for Lester Holt. I know. And it's so funny to me, too, when people see you out, you know, they're always like, oh, it must be great to go into a news station and get your hair and makeup done. I'm like,
oh, my God.
If I had a hair and makeup person, don't you think I'd look even better on television? I mean, we all do everything ourselves. Like, what?
Yeah, the biggest misconception is like we have hair and makeup. I mean, obviously, some places do. And the more that you, you know, climb in this business, that they even have stylists for you. But no, we've been doing hair and makeup for years now. And it's a skill that you end up learning. You're not great at it. I'm sure there's like ways to improve, but yeah. One day.
Tell me this, is it just you and your brother? Or do you have other siblings? Just the two of you.
Yes.
And I think I had read, was it the Santa Barbara tape? Did your brother go out and shoot it with you? Something about like you kind of did like some fake stand-ups and he shot it for you?
Yeah, you know, again, before I got into the business, it was actually the way I started was before I got into the American broadcasting industry. I worked for Persian television. I got recruited by a satellite station based in Los Angeles to host an entertainment show all in Farsi. And I remember going like, all in Farsi? Like, there's no way, Mom. Like, I speak Finglish. I mix my English and my Farsi. Like, how am I going to do a program in a half hour all in Farsi? my mom was like, no, I'll remind you, it'll be good for you. And it kind of was great for me because I kind of could work out my nerves in front of the camera on a Persian, you know, television platform. And so once it kind of like got that under my belt, so I was like, okay, I think I'm ready. But my brother tried to help add to my reel because Persian television offered more entertainment news. I wanted more hard news reporting. So I was working also at CNN part-time, and they were helping me a lot to put some clips together. I was going out with some of the producers to maybe shoot some stand-ups. But then my brother also, he was applying to medical schools, and I flew with him a couple places, including Washington, D.C. and New York, where we said, okay, since we're here, we bought a camcorder at the time, and we would like do mock stand-ups in different places. And I remember one of the mock stand-ups that my brother recorded for me was in front of the White House. And I was pretending I was a reporter. I wasn't, you know, I didn't have a job at that point, but I was, you know, doing some mock stand-ups for me. And just reminiscing on that, which was, gosh, 10, 12 years ago, for him to record me in front of the White House. And then for me to then now get a job here. And I've, you know, definitely done hits there in front of the White House, in front of the Capitol.
I know.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. Life comes full circle, you know?
Talk about crazy manifesting. I mean, it came like full circle.
Yes.
So you end up getting, you start as an entertainment reporter. Was that in Santa Barbara or in Los Angeles?
That was in Los Angeles. And the Persian television station, I did entertainment reporting, which kind of, again, just got my feet wet into the getting me in front of a camera. And, you know, they sent me to movie premieres and junkets and whatnot. Again, I did all my interviews in English, but I would come and report to the, you know, Persian television station in Farsi, and it would be broadcast internationally.
Wow.
So that was cool. That was a cool experience. And then when we went to Santa Barbara, that was hard news reporting, although we did some entertainment news too then.
So you, and then how long were you in Santa Barbara?
4.5 years.
4.5 years. And then from there you go to what market? Then you go?
Sacramento.
Then so, you go to Sacramento.
Yeah, so top 20. So top 20. And so I moved to Sacramento. I became the weekend anchor there. I was the weekend anchor for a couple of years. And then I got promoted. And I was working weeknights. And I was anchoring more there in Sacramento at CBS station. And it was really great. I mean, I got really lucky because from working part-time at CNN behind the scenes before I got my television gig, my CNN family really helped, you know, teach me the writing, the behind the scenes look. And again, I think when people want to get into this industry, you really have to see all facets of it, right? Because you might go in and go, oh my God, I love the producing side of this.
Yeah.
You know, like I love the writing side of this. There's so much to this industry that you might only be seeing the reporter on television, but there's so much more behind the scenes. So I love it because CNN introduced me to all of that. And then the Persian television also got me familiar with the camera. Santa Barbara was a great, like, you know, grind of learning how to report. And then Sacramento was just great news market. We covered so much, you know, the wildfires in California were massive. State capital. So you had some political reporting there. So it was a really great experience. And then coming here has been amazing.
Well, of course, Sacramento too, you meet your husband, Joe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and Joe. Yeah, that's a perk. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, we can't forget about Joe. Okay, so you meet your husband. True. Were you guys working at the same station or competing stations?
No, we were competing. So competing. We were competing journalists in Sacramento. He was at the Fox station there, actually, and I was at the CBS station.
And so
station.
What was the deal?
Both weekend anchors.
Would you see him out or you saw him on TV? Like, how did you guys end up connecting?
Yeah, you know, The media in Sacramento, we kind of like would have, you know, gatherings or mixers or whatever. So we kind of all knew of each other. And I remember funny story, the first time I met Joe, and he'll always make fun of me for it. I was new in the market. We both were maybe just there for like a few weeks. And I was like trying to keep track of everyone that I was meeting. And I totally mistook him for this other guy that I'd met in the market. So when I saw him reporting in front of the Capitol one night, I was like, hi, great to see you. And he looks at me with his photographer. He's like,
who's this?
He's like, do you know her? And he's like, no. He's like, but come on, like, let's go say hi, whatever. So I think he's totally someone else. I like him saying, hi, how are you? Let's take a picture together. Look how beautiful the Capitol is. So we take a picture in front of the Capitol, which becomes part of our story. And afterwards he goes, can you text me that picture? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, do you want my phone number? And I'm like, I have your number. And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure you don't have my number. And I like turned pale white, like, oh my God, I like mistook this guy. Anyway, so we joke about it now, but fast forward, we never started dating right then. We just became like friends and colleagues and whatnot. 3 years later, we were at a protest and he asked me, you know, would you like to go for a drink or something afterwards? And I went. And, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes when you're looking for someone, you know, looking for, you know, your husband, your future husband or wife, sometimes they're right there in front of you and you don't see them for whatever reason. And so when I went on that like first date with him, it was just like, oh my God, like everything that I've ever been wanting or looking for in a guy was sitting like right across from me.
But really, I mean, cute. Oh my God, took you guys 3 years after that meeting to get together. That's another moment of fate. I mean, I'm sure you guys both dated other people probably within that time. I mean, it's amazing that nothing worked out. You know, you two are truly meant to be.
Yeah, you know, I really do believe it was fate. I really do think that timing was everything. Because maybe he said that he tried for 3 years, but I was playing hard to get her. So I took him 3 years.
But, well, yeah, you were like, sorry, I thought you were somebody else. Bye.
Yeah, you know, and I, for whatever reason, it didn't work out beforehand. We never explored it. And then once we actually had that one-on-one time, it was like, oh my God. It was like the seas parted. And I'm like, oh, it's right there.
So it was truly for you, it was like love at first sight. Like the first date you went on, did you kind of know I'm going to marry this guy?
After that first date, yeah. I had the – and it's so funny, Sarah, because, you know, dating, it was either two things never lined up.
Oh.
Chemistry and timing.
Yeah.
Either the chemistry was great, but the timing wasn't good because, you know, I don't know, he's into his career, you're moving into a new city, whatever's happening, you know, or the timing is great. The guy's ready to marry you or wants to marry you or whatever, but you're like, ugh. I have literally no chemistry. And like, I don't know what it is, you know, the guy is a great guy or whatever it is. So chemistry and timing, sometimes I would struggle with. And with him, I was worried because the chemistry was there. And I'm like, oh my God, is the timing there? You know, where's he at in his life? What is he looking for? You know? And when I told him what I was looking for, and I was pretty honest with him, like date number three, he kind of reciprocated and it was like, you know, it wasn't, he said, he was honest. He was like, I wasn't looking for someone in Sacramento. He thought the next market would be the place he would, you know, find his girl. But he's like, I'm not stupid. So you're like, yeah, let's do it. So,
cause you guys dated for like only 2 years, right? Before he asked you to marry him?
For a year and got engaged.
A year and got engaged. I mean, that is like knowing.
Yeah.
And you got engaged. It wasn't live on air, right? But he surprised you.
But it was a funny story because I feel like as journalists, it's hard to like surprise each other because, you know, we're investigative reporters, so we'll find out somehow. But he was really sneaky with the way he did this. He really got me. I was totally surprised. First of all, he did it on a Thursday, and who proposes on a Thursday? But
you're right. A proposal's like a Friday or Saturday night, baby.
Or like
I mean,
they propose like when you're on vacation.
Yes.
But he had coordinated this with my boss at CBS, my news director, who assigned me a fake story, talking about fake news, and told me like, hey, put together this special report about, you know, women at the state capitol getting empowered to run for office and more women, you know, doing that. And there's an organization that's really pushing for it. I want you to, you know, interview the head of this organization. Mind you, this press release that he's showing me is totally made up and written by Joe with the name of the person who's running this organization, totally made up. It's going to be one of his friends like playing the role. And so he had this whole thing planned out because he really wanted to throw me off. So I come home from work and I'm like, yeah, I got assigned this like special report. And he was acting like, you know, so down. He's like, oh, that sounds interesting, you know. And I'm like, yeah, so I'm trying to set it up. There's a lot of moving parts. They really haven't launched yet because I called the woman. I'm asking her a million questions about her organization, you know, what they're doing exactly. And so we set up an interview and Joe told her like, these are the questions she's probably going to ask you, and try to set it up for this day at this time. And you suggest to do it at, in front of the Capitol, which is where we met that one night where I mistook him for someone else. And so,
this is such an elaborate, I mean, you win the award for like best engagement at Fox 5. I mean, keep going.
It's so creative.
It's
right?
So detailed. Yes.
So I totally am in work mode. Right. And he's a reporter too. So we were both going to work that day. And I remember I text the woman. I'm like, okay, I'm here. I'm standing in front of the Capitol. And mind you, my photographer is in on it too. He's like setting up the shot to do this interview, but he knows what's about to happen. And so Joe had brought the same photographer that he was working with the night that we met, again, 3 and 4 years ago. And the same photographer I was working with the night that we met, because we took that photo. And we might even have it here. Oh.
Shireen's going to find the photo of this.
So I'll have to show you the behind the before and after. But this is the day that we got engaged. This is both photographers and this is us in front of the Capitol.
When you tell this.
And we have the same exact photo from 4 years ago. Same. So like we put it like side by side, and I don't have the other one on me right now. But anyway, so I'm standing there, I'm waiting for my interview. And then all of a sudden I see Joe just kind of stroll along with his photographer. I don't think much of it because again, he's a photographer. I mean, he's a reporter in the area. So I just kind of was like, oh my gosh, hi, how are you? What are you doing? You know? And he's like, are you waiting for your interview? I'm like, yeah, I'm doing that special report. You know, she should be here any second. And then he kind of starts getting a little weird on me. And he's like, well, I don't think she's showing up. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, because I made her up. I wanted to bring you here, the place that we met 4 years ago. And I'm like, now I'm like, what is happening? Because his photographer, camera up, my photographer, camera up, pointing at me. And I'm like, what's happening? And it was like so surreal, right? And then he's getting all, you know, emotional and telling me, you know, amazing things. And I'm freaking out, like, because my head just was not in this headspace at all. Like, he really got me. I was in work mode. Wait, what are you talking about? This is my sweep story. This is my special report. And then he got down on one knee and I was like,
okay, were you like scared that something was wrong, or did you like pretty quickly know?
And you know what? It's so interesting because
isn't that
I always envisioned my parents being there, my family being there.
Yeah.
So I did look around for a second and I was like, oh my God, my parents are not here. I like panicked, right? But they were there. They were hiding behind bushes.
Oh, no way. Oh my God, Joe thought of everything, really? Your parents
were
in the bushes?
Bushes? And it was so funny because when you hear this from my parents' perspective, it's a hilarious story. My dad especially, he's a hilarious guy. So he's like, imagine two Middle Easterners like crouching behind a plant. You know?
People are like, what's going on with these two? Yeah. They're like suspicious of them in Sacramento.
Well, also very suspicious because it's in front of the U.S. Capitol.
Oh, my God. He does have a good sense of humor. That's really funny, actually. That's good.
Really funny.
But wait a minute.
My mom and my dad were like hiding. And so after he proposed and I said yes, like they came out and yeah, it was really sweet.
This is the audience has two questions for you, though. One, did Joe pick out the engagement ring himself and did you actually like it? Because I think that's like a woman's worst fear is that these men.
I know.
Honestly,
it was one of those things where, you know how they're like, oh, I'm just going to let my husband choose. And I'm like, you know, I really wanted to like my ring and not have any kind of like, oh, I love it. I just wish it was blah. You know, I didn't want to have that. So I was very particular in giving hints to my friends who then gave hints to him. And
smart.
We actually met a jeweler in Sacramento that almost became like family, Sharif Jewelers. And they were just so lovely towards us. And once they found out we were engaged, you know, Joe went directly to him. And so I sent my friends a lot of pictures and then they kind of did their own, you know, development of it. So I never actually saw the ring, but it was perfect and beautiful and I love it.
Do you and Joe like not tell your friends this engagement story much for fear that people will hate you? Because this is like, I mean, I don't think I, I, mean, oh yeah, we got engaged. I mean, you like, I mean, other women well, must be like, I wish my husband
is,
did that.
The thing is, it's all on video. And you know, it's, his photographer started videotaping him even before like he got to me. So this video is really sweet and really cute. And it really takes us back, because unfortunately that happened in 2019 and we still haven't had our wedding. Oh, so life yes. happens, you know, and that's another thing, you know, big lesson of COVID is when you think you can plan things, you really can't, right? Because I got engaged in April of 2019 thinking I would be, you know, have this
beautiful wedding
of my dreams of June 2020, which never happened. We did actually on the day of the wedding day that was supposed to happen, we had a small ceremony, 15, 20 people at his hometown church in Detroit with mostly his family, but my parents did fly in. But we never had like the huge celebration, our first dance, you know, just the things that we always wanted to have. So we are planning on it. God willing with COVID. I don't even know anymore.
Canceled
3 times.
Was that heartbreaking? Because a lot of women spend a lot of time, you know, thinking about their wedding day. And I have to tell you, I was a woman that didn't really care about it. Then when I did it, I was like, oh my God, I'm so glad.
That you did it.
Yes. Like I ended up loving it, you know, How is that? Are you kind of like disappointed? I mean, you guys are still planning something.
I was really heartbroken. I bet. I was like, you know, I couldn't believe it. You know, I think all of us were in shock. I even think closer to June, I thought it might happen. Now looking back, I'm like, oh my God. You know, but even like in April and May, I was hopeful that maybe should I cancel? And I was so in my, you know, there's an excitement that you have as you're planning a wedding. And I was so into the details and I was very hands-on and and then when it got canceled and we had to have that small ceremony, it was still beautiful, but like my heart broke because I remember I was getting my makeup and hair done that day with no one there, you know, none of my girlfriends, none of my friends, you know, my brother, unfortunately couldn't fly in either because, you know, of COVID and he has kids. And so it was just a little sad, you know, like, but yeah, we had everything was streamed and, you know, so it was very emotional to me. You know, obviously the biggest blessing was that I was marrying and the guy that I love. And I think that was the constant reminder for me. And I think the reality check for me was, wow, you know, the flowers, I guess, don't matter right now. I can't even have this wedding, you know? So it made me more calm that day in a sense, like while it was very sad and I was very emotional not having everyone that I love there while we just made it official, I was still really grateful that, you know, hey, I found my love though. A lot of people struggle to find that. And so I was trying to look at the positive things. And then when it got canceled like 3 more times,
you're like over it, but it is a heartbreak. It's disappointing. I mean, that's a very special day, and especially for the love that you and Joe have. And it is
so
like,
we were, you know, and then we got pregnant and then we were like, oh, okay, well, we're going to have a baby.
Yeah. Who cares? Someone's awesome. We're like, all right.
And you know, life just took us in a different direction than we thought. And things didn't play out exactly, but we're also very blessed. I mean, we have a healthy baby, we're married, we're happy, we bought a home here, so we both found jobs here in this city, so we feel very blessed. And we are hoping to have that big reception and celebration and bring the families together in 2022.
Crossing our
fingers that you it actually will. Happens.
What was it like moving to DC? Because Joe got his job first, right, in television here. And what is Joe? Where does Joe work? Where can people see him?
So Joe, you know, had these big aspirations to work on Capitol Hill and do political reporting. And kudos to him. I mean, he really worked hard and he was pushing political stories in Sacramento, which was great to work at the state capitol. But his next goal was to essentially work on the Hill in DC. And so he got an opportunity to work for Nexstar as a political correspondent. And so once we found out that he was going to actually work on Capitol Hill, he took that opportunity immediately. We kind of made that decision, which was hard for me to leave California because all my family, my roots are in California. So to move across the country, his family's in Detroit, by the way. So we're actually a little bit closer to them, which is nice.
Yep.
But that was a big move because I didn't have a job. You know, I had a great job lined up in Sacramento for me if I wanted to stay. So giving that up and then coming here without a job was a bit risky, but I always felt like I had made decisions in my life for my career, you know, because before then it was just me and my career. Wherever it took me, I went. And this time was I made a decision based on my personal life. So even though it was hard, I knew it was right. You know, wow. I knew ultimately he was the guy that I was going to spend the rest of my life with. And I knew that with conviction. So I made that tough decision. And then when we came here, we started interviewing. We had met a couple of the news directors beforehand. And Fox 5 just seemed like the perfect fit for me. They gave me a great opportunity. And it was like, boom, within maybe a month and a half, I got a job here too. So
That's very quick. I mean, you know, another sign it was meant to be, you know, but that's a risk. What's the biggest difference between living West Coast and living East Coast?
Oh my gosh, the weather.
Oh girl, I know. It must be so hard after all that California sunshine and here it's like gray skies.
I do sometimes cry over the weather.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
You know, Sue Palka, Caitlin, Roth, they always feel for me being a California girl because I get so excited when we get long stretches of just normal weather. Let's just have some warm weather where we could just go outside and, you know, not be hit with rain or thunderstorms or whatever it was. And I'm still adjusting to that. The winters are different for me. Driving was different for me, you know, even knowing how to drive in like icy conditions, snowy conditions was different. So I think the weather was a big adjustment and I'm still working on that.
Yeah.
And then the biggest is just not being near family. And I think that's the hardest part for me, especially having a baby and not having like my mom right here, you know, my family just all around. I think that's been like the hardest adjustment. But thank goodness for streaming because
I know. Isn't it beautiful?
They're watching us like every night.
Yeah. You're on FaceTime. I mean, they literally get to see their grandchild. Like, I mean, it's beautiful. Like, that's one of the greatest things about technology. Like, it's amazing. So good. So much.
Here's my biggest accomplishment in life.
Oh, I hear you. Oh, my God. I wish KJ was here to see her. She's so beautiful. Okay. Hi. Oh my God.
Say hi, Dodo. Say hi, Selma.
Oh, Selma.
Say hi, Sarah.
Selma, we're obsessed. Shireen, do you show Selma a lot on Fox 5? Does the Fox 5 viewer get to see her much?
No, actually, they don't. They don't.
This is an exclusive.
I don't even think they've seen her since she's been, since I posted a birth picture.
Oh, we got an exclusive. We got an exclusive, Selma. Okay, Selma. Yeah,
this is her first interview. Can you say mama? Can you say mama?
Mama.
Can you say, I see the moon and the moon sees me.
Oh my God, I'm in love. I need to have another child immediately.
Say hi, Selma.
Okay, Selma, we only need your mama.
Don't eat my
All right.
hair. Don't eat my hair.
Shireen, we know you're a working mama. We need just 10 more minutes. We're ending these episodes with rapid fire, okay? Just rapid fire questions. Selma, we love you.
I look orange.
And we get Joe, too.
No, I think you look good.
Okay, Kara, you can feed her now. Say bye-bye.
Bye, Selma. Bye.
See, it's so sweet.
Oh my God, I can't wait for her to meet KJ.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Tell me the funniest mom fail you and Joe have experienced.
Oh my gosh, so many like parent fails, right? Things that you go through, you're like, oh my gosh. But probably the one that made us feel the worst as parents was we finally were going to take Selma out for like an outing. We were invited to like a rehearsal dinner for my cousin's wedding. And it was in Detroit. We actually took her on a plane. We flew there. Everything went great. But once we got to this restaurant, it was on the 72nd floor. And we went up there and Selma just started screaming, crying. And I was like, oh no, she's hungry. What do I do? I tried to troubleshoot everything I could. And for like 30 minutes straight, this poor baby was crying. And then we felt like the worst parents in the world because we were like, oh, we're on the 72nd floor, her ears. And we're like, is it her ears? And we literally we're like, oh my gosh, our ears are popping. And we just didn't even think about it. Oh. And so we took the elevator back down to the first floor and literally poor baby stopped crying. And it was like, she was like, finally.
Finally, mom and dad, no air pressure up there.
Yeah, poor baby. So that was probably our biggest like fail that like we just felt so crappy afterwards. But yeah, you know, just the other things that happen, you know, a lot of poop blowouts that Sarah, I'm sure you're used to.
Tons. Forgetting the diaper bag. I mean, I
oh yeah, forgetting wipes.
Forgetting wipes.
How do you survive without forgetting?
I mean, look, I tell people I flew to Detroit and I thought I had it all together. I had packed the bag the night before. I was like, oh, my God, I am such a like, you know, I'm a mom that's put together. I get to the airport, I open the bag. I forgot the bottles. I was like, I actually fed him the formula. Like I had the to-go formulas like out of the cup. Like I was trying to pour it into his mouth. It was so bad.
We forgot wipes. We were using tissues. We forgot the second part of the stroller. We had the car seat part that attaches to the stroller. We didn't bring the second part. So, you know, just, I think those are the things that kind of make you learn. Yeah. I remember, and also another fail we had was we wanted to go on a date. And we took her with us. We were like, this is perfect. We'll go to the National Mall. It's a beautiful day. Joe went and picked out like some food, some Mexican food. We packed a picnic. And then as soon as we got there in the car, we literally did not leave our car for about an hour and a half. Because she was crying. She needed food. She pooped. I had to change her diaper. Then she wanted to sleep. And we're like, we just basically enjoyed our picnic from our car.
Yeah.
As we looked at the National Mall and said, wow, looks like people are having a great time.
I hear you. Sharon, you are very beautiful. And I'm wondering, like, if you have liked the attention that you've received, I'm sure, over the years of your looks. And I'm not sure what the difference is with, you know, if Persian culture puts a lot of emphasis on looks like American culture does for women. I'm assuming yes, it seems to be worldwide.
Well, first of all, thank you so much, Sarah. And so are you. I think that was probably the hardest thing as a woman, is just to navigate expectations of us. So thank you for complimenting me. But even growing up, you know, you grow up with insecurities because you're surrounded by this image of what you are supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And especially even getting into this industry of broadcasting, what you see on television is a very perfect face and perfect everything, right? I think at first, this notion of having to be perfect was stuck in my head. Mm-hmm. And I think that didn't work for my benefit, you know, because even though, you know, maybe some people might say, well, she doesn't need to do much. I felt like I did because I felt you were trying to compete with whatever image was being put out there. And I think I worry about that a lot when I now have a daughter because of the images and the messages that we're seeing on social media are tenfold from even what I was exposed to growing up. And I think that the American culture does put a lot of pressure on looking good and looking a certain way. But I think as time went on, you have to realize that whatever is out here is going to be fading, you know, and not lasting. Mm-hmm. And whatever's in here and your inner strength is what's going to like even push through all of that. And I think that was a life lesson that took me a while to learn because I feel like you had to kind of work through all the insecurities of pushing through that, even if the world is giving you a different message.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I really hope that the next generation of young women can look at a lot of these people on Instagram and on television and see that a lot of that is actually not real. A lot of that is so not normal, and to really embrace who you are and the imperfections that you have.
Yeah.
Because even wanting to be in this industry, you want to be like someone, right? And you realize who is Sharon, because there's only one Sharon Rajay, right?
Yeah.
Or Shirin Rajay, which is how you say it in Farsi. And maybe before I felt I needed to emulate someone, I needed to look like someone. So I think that that's kind of the struggle that I think people deal with, and I think women are continuing to deal with, comparing themselves.
Yeah.
I think that is a hard thing to work through.
Tell me a favorite hobby you have.
Dancing, singing. I did some choreography work when I was like in college. That was like my outlet. Yeah, I loved to like do hip hop choreography, did some like, you know, Latin dancing, because I just like dancing and reinvigorates my soul. And singing too, actually, before I wanted to go into news, I wanted to be like a pop star. Thank God.
Really? That would have been great. I feel like that's the hardest business of all.
My brother and I would jam because he's great at music. He played the drums, he played the piano, he liked to make beats. And so when we were at home, living at home, when we were young in high school, we had his home studio.
Oh my God.
And he would like make beats and I would like, you know, put melodies to them and sing. And
you guys were almost the Osmonds. Like you were almost like you guys were almost the Osmonds, you know, like that like so, brother and sister or like the Jacksons. Yeah. You were almost like the like Michael Jackson and family. Okay, LA is a car town. What was your first car growing up?
Oh my goodness. I had like a Nissan hatchback car, you know, I don't know. It had four wheels and it was like an old car that the family had. And we like, I was so excited to drive it. And then I had a Mitsubishi Mirage. And then my coolest car I drove was like a Land Rover. And
oh, nice. Okay. You were making your way on up.
I love cars, but I realized one thing I love about cars. I love SUVs. That's my jam.
It's perfect with a kid.
Just not a minivan. I'm not there yet, but I like sitting high up.
Last question, Sharin. What is something, what's a hobby, a thing? What is something you'd love to get back to?
Oh, sorry, I just got interrupted. What did you say?
No problem. Tell me what is something you want to get back to? You had mentioned at the beginning of this, you know, like being a mom, it does change you. Like you can't just dance when you want, or, you know, what's something you want to get back to before you had your daughter or kind of want to reclaim?
Well, first of all, working out.
Yes, I hear you.
I'm like, I can't remember the last time I like worked out consistently. So I think just taking care of your like mental and physical and, you know, body is number one, because you're so on the go. I'm so on the go. I'm either in mama mode, taking care of baby, or in work mode. So I would love to just get back into like a workout routine where you feel good. You know, I go get my nails done regularly. And then also if I were to kind of take on something again, it would be dance. Yeah. If I could go take some dance classes, you know, jump into some kind of choreography work of something, I think it will kind of just give me that reboot that you need, you know, for your soul. I think it's like so good. And I also miss a lot of my friends too. My friends are kind of scattered all over their place, but mostly in California. So it'll be nice to like reunite with everybody, especially now that hopefully if we can with COVID, I know it's like up and down. It's like a roller coaster these days.
Sharin, when can people watch you? When are you on Fox 5?
So Fox 5, I am blessed to be on Monday through Friday, 6:30. You can catch me from 6:30 to 7. I anchor the 6:30 news with Rob. And then also on Fox 5 Plus, which is our sister station, at 8 o'clock, at 9 o'clock, I anchor those shows. And then you also see me in the 10 o'clock. We'll be putting some content together, sometimes in the 11 o'clock. So mostly evenings is where you can catch me.
Love it. And where can people follow you on social media?
So yeah, I'm really active on Instagram. That's kind of the platform that I'm most active on. So message me, send me a comment. I'm usually checking that one often, or on Twitter. And then sometimes I get to Facebook, but with baby, it's hard to like manage social
all
media. I'm trying to do it. I don't know how you do it.
Sharin, I adore you. Thank you so much for being on Key Card
Sarah,
Podcast.
Love you. I know we have a lot more to talk about, and I hope that we can like share mommy stories and watch our babies grow.
I know.
And also be working on ourselves as women.
That's
you know,
the goal.
I think it's so great to be able to like connect with other women that can boost each other up, because I think we need a lot more of that.
100%. Thanks, Sharin.
Okay, bye.
Bye.